back on, Sherry.
We're back on. Did you want to call back to order?
Yes, back to order at 6:47.
So then I think we're on the action items, sir, and the last one there is the Hughes Avenue General Binding Site Plan. Mr. Campbell had said he'd make it by 6:45. He probably will be here any moment. Mr. Conley is here, so if you have questions, he may be able to address them. The extension of a general binding site plan is pretty common in the sense it's typical, like an extension of a plat. There are timelines in our code, and for that matter, state law related to some of these items. And for a general binding site plan, the timeline is 5 years. And then there are two options for one-year extensions. They can be given one after another, but not both at the same time. So this is the first one-year extension on this item. Potentially, the applicant could be back in another year for another extension, and then the clock just runs out. The difference between a general binding site plan and a preliminary plat is that with a preliminary plat, there's a substantial amount of infrastructure required prior to recording the action, because the plat actually creates additional pieces of property. It divides the land. A general binding site plan wouldn't really divide the land. It requires the additional actions of recording specific binding site plans that slice off the pieces of property within the plan, within the concept, if you will, of the general binding site plan. So Mr. Conley is approved for the general binding site plan down at Hughes. It lays out the conceptual road alignment, stormwater pond, conservation tracts, those sorts of things. If he records this but doesn't record a specific binding site plan within the next 2 years, it goes away anyway. That's the nature of a general binding site plan and a specific binding site plan. So we've reached the five-year time limit, or at least that will occur here in a couple of weeks. And Doug Campbell, Mr. Conley's engineer, has requested an extension of the general binding site plan for one additional year, as is permitted. Council doesn't really have criteria for this action. You can grant it or not grant it. If you take no action, it would expire. If you obviously deny the request, it would expire. And if you grant the extension, it would be extended for one additional year until July of 2015. There probably could be a lot of different questions on this item, but I'll probably leave it at that and see if you have any. If you have any questions for me, as I mentioned, Mr. Conley's here, and Mr. Campbell has come in while I was speaking, so he's here as well.
Questions for Michael? Michael, how many more extensions would they be allowed?
They would be permitted one more after this. So this is a one-year extension. There could be one more one-year extension.
Okay. Then it's done.
Michael, would they go to get the final authorization for the general binding site?
The final authorization for general binding site plan?
Yeah. Where does that get recorded?
Well, it gets the signatures come here from staff, myself, Raven. We would verify that the council conditions of approval have been satisfied. Jeff signs off on finances related to it, and then ultimately it's recorded with the county, where all the recordations happen. But we are, staff here is responsible for ensuring that the items are satisfied.
I guess I have a problem with, it talks in the last paragraph on the first page that there seems to be a problem with the court-ordered stormwater pond and other stormwater infrastructure improvements.
Those items have not been completed as of yet. They're nearly complete. A lot of work has been done on them, but they're not completed as of yet.
And then the other part is, if you want to use a portion of it, you have to have a specific site plan. Is that right?
Yes and no. It's a little bit complicated because this property actually involves one large, discrete property, which generally is where the truck parking is contained, and someone could develop that property and have a use on it independent of the general binding site plan. The other remainder of the property is crisscrossed with public rights of way and alleys, and it is a variety of smaller parcels in a grid system. So on those areas, to develop the project and to develop a use, yes, someone would need to take some sort of land use entitlement. It could be a general binding site plan or other things. The general binding site plan makes a lot of sense in this instance. But for the larger parcel where the truck parking is, because it's a discrete parcel already, it could be developed independent of this action. It's a little bit complicated. Generally, yes, is the answer to your question. But in this instance, there happens to be that other larger piece. And if you have questions on the permitting process related to wetlands or exactly where they are in some of those items, Mr. Campbell, I think, can speak to that.
Michael, on the in this last paragraph on the first page again, what time periods are allowed for these particular items? Like the court ordered stormwater pond. When the court orders that you put in a stormwater pond, did they give you a specific time to complete the project?
There probably was a timeline at that point. I do not recall, to be honest with you. It was quite some time ago. It predates my employment here.
So we would assume that the stormwater pond was not completed in the time frame given by the court.
No, I can't say that for sure. But the general binding site plan was a proposed solution to move the project forward and get some of those things resolved, and the stormwater pond was included in that, and the facilities, and it was developed to a great extent, although it's not completely signed off on at this point. This project goes back quite a ways, long before the general binding site plan.
If someone does not comply with a court order, whose responsibility is to see that it is completed in compliance with the court order? Is it us or is it the court?
That's a great question. I guess it would be our responsibility to take action to pursue it. Ultimately, would be the court.
And we've not done that.
Well, we have in this instance. It was developing the general binding site plan and Mr. Conley developing the stormwater pond. And again, it's about 90% or more complete. It's there, but it's not. It's not signed off on because there are some small items still to be completed.
And would we have put a time frame on when we were requiring improvements to operate the truck parking facility?
Yes and no. The City Council made a decision some years ago to allow that to continue while it was being legalized, and there wasn't a timeline established. At that point, again, that predates my employment here. And since then, we've worked on getting the truck parking complete through a site plan review process, and including things like landscaping, stormwater facility, improvements to the street. A lot of that stuff remains incomplete.
And I guess the question I would have, if they are not complete, would we anticipate having them completed by the 1 year from now?
I think that would be an excellent question that Mr. Campbell might be able to shed some light on.
Now, the next question is, could we require they be completed by the next year?
You certainly could indicate that in your extension, and if they were not, we would, of course, be able to report on that. I don't think that you can condition this on that, per se, because this is not a land use approval.
But could we specify that if these improvements are not completed within 1 year, we will not grant another extension?
That the council would look upon that with disfavor. I don't think that you can say what you will do in the future, because you might in fact do something different.
Okay. But you could say that
you could make it very clear what you expect. Okay. But again, their councils change and situations change.
I understand.
Michael, the concern I have is if the stormwater facility isn't operating the way it's supposed to, and yet we're having the trucks in there and whatever, it seems to me we're really pushing things as far as Drayton Harbor.
I can't disagree with that.
Any other questions?
Yes.
Paul?
Yeah, Michael, you made the comment that things change from time to time, and we don't want to bind future councils to what previous councils have done. By the same token, we don't need to find ourselves today bound by what previous councils may have done in years past. What has changed in my mind that's significant is Blaine Connected and the possible effect that having truck parking in a fairly close to Blaine Connector, fairly close to what might be the centerpiece of the town. And trucks, although necessary, are not what I would call conducive to a good, prosperous-looking atmosphere. So I guess my question, succinctly stated, would be, what is the future of the truck parking activity currently on the land? And B, what is the intended long-term use of this land?
All I can really speak to is what the entitlements are and what the zoning allows, and the zoning in that area does allow something such as a truck parking facility and other traveler services like that. It's a transportation-oriented zone and traveler service-oriented zone. So that would be something to reconsider if the council decided that that was an inappropriate land use in that location. There is an entitlement for the truck parking facility, but conditioned upon installing all the amenities that would be required, such as the landscaping, paved surfacing, and such, and an improved entry driveway, which would eventually convert to a public road. Those things are not in place at this point.
And how long does that entitlement continue?
It is a year plus. In fact, at this point, that entitlement may have expired. I would have to go back and check because it's not directly tied to the general binding site plan. But again, this is a council from quite some time ago. I don't think any of you were seated at that point, did approve the truck parking use while this was resolved.
Understood. But as you stated so clearly earlier, actions by prior councils do not bind future councils, mm-hmm. including this one.
Right. And so, if council were inclined to work towards eliminating the truck parking in that location, one would be to give us some direction to do that. It would require a number of actions, one probably being taking some sort of legal action to essentially trespass the trucks from that location, because I believe the business is still operating without a business license. Not entirely positive of that. And then begin to take action to not have the trucks there. That's a little bit different than the general, it's very different than the general binding site plan action. Relevant, absolutely, but different than the extension.
Okay, so is the truck parking operation being operated by Mr. Connolly?
It's his property. I don't know who's operating it per se, but it is his property.
Okay, I think that what my sense would be is to do nothing tonight while we get answers to some of these questions that several of us have raised.
Okay, I'm going to want to make a list of what those questions are so I know what it is exactly, sir, that you'd like to know.
Fair enough.
Steve?
I would like to hear from Mr. Conley's representative on what their plans are to utilize the year to grant the extension so we can understand a little bit more what they have in mind for this next year to grant this.
Would you like me to take a seat, sir, and Mr. Campbell perhaps can address that.
I think that would be appropriate.
Michael, I think there's a correction on that location, too. It's got northeast in the first paragraph under the background summary.
First page, Michael.
It's the northeast corner of Peace Portal and Hughes Avenue.
How can it be?
He's better with the back of the street.
He's better. Oh,
he's with the back of the street.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Mr. Campbell, I'm sure you may have some other remarks, but could you address the question as it's been raised as to what your plans are or what plans would be for the property in the next coming year?
Doug Campbell, I'm the engineer for the project, 1401 Astor Street in Bellingham. I would like, before I address that, to hand out a map so that the council is really clear about the site issues that are in front of you, if that would be permissible. Thank you, Reverend. What I handed out was a copy of the binding site plan that you're referring to tonight. And I want to make it a point here that there's three pages. The second page in the handout is a representation of the rights-of-way that the city owns right now. And you can see from that picture that Pike Street, Pinckney, Pearl, and so forth bisect this property in considerable number of ways. And that fundamentally what we're proposing to do is to eliminate those rights of ways so that on page 3 we're proposing to create a public right-of-way that would then serve the entire property. So I'm kind of working backwards from your question, in that if this action doesn't go forward, what happens is we have no efficient way of serving this property, and that those rights of ways, which were vacated by previous council, which are a legal action, would be in limbo. And I would urge the council to consider that strongly here. What we're trying to do is to make that property a viable piece of property for any developer, whether it be Mr. Conley or any other developer that comes into Blaine. As you know, Mr. Conley's developed several properties in Blaine, including the Blaine Business Park, where you have Nature Path, Totally Chocolate, the Homeland Security, and the vitamin plant over there. Mr. Conley has a record of and a vision here of trying to make this property a viable property. So, to answer your question, how does Mr. Conley proceed at this point without your approval? It's very difficult for me to answer that. I can't imagine that we would want to go backwards from what's been done, the hundreds of thousands of dollars that have been spent on this property to bring it into compliance with the city's regulations for economic development. That's what we're here about. Your ordinance clearly establishes a 2-year provision. Now, if Mr. Conley had made no advances on this property in 5 years, I would probably be supporting the potential advancement of no more extensions. But that's not the case. Mr. Conley's made a lot of progress. In the light of the 2007-08 recession, my letter is clear. Everyone was suffering. Even the state provided hardship extensions for 2 years for even their own properties. So we're trying to come out of this recession. This property, I think, has a viable long-term effect on not only truck parking, although that's not the best and highest use for this property, but it does get the trucks off the streets, and it provides a temporary solution to that issue. Blaine, whether we like it or not, is a transportation-related hub. We move things by truck in Blaine.
Mr. Porter, could I just interrupt?
Certainly.
You're on a point there. You said that in the 5 years since he's owned the property, about 5 years since we've approved the binding site.
That's correct.
You mentioned that improvements had been made. Could you highlight exactly what has been accomplished in the 5-year period since we approved?
Certainly, I can do that. First of all, we went to council and ask for the vacation of the rights of way that I have illustrated by the handout. That took a considerable amount of time. We also mitigated the wetlands, the impact of wetlands on the site. The city's own ordinances require that we go, that we cannot mitigate on site more than 50%, so we had to go to another property on Odell Road, and we bought that from a property that's actually in Whatcom County near the fire station. We had to mitigate that site, which is still in progress. In the meantime, Mr. Connolly built hundreds of thousands of dollars in infrastructure, built this stormwater facility over there. And some mention was made earlier as whether or not it's working or not. It's certainly working. It's been tested. In fact, I would argue politely that the gateway zone to this date has no stormwater protection. Mr. Connolly has gone out of his way to improve that property to the extent that he has met all the regulations on his property. I think it's unfair to paint his efforts as not productive in regard to stormwater improvements. He's done wetland planting. His existing ponds are regulated. The ones that were there from the previous, before his time, are regulated wetlands. He has to maintain and manage those ponds. He's also provided stockpiling of materials, a lot of which came from the city of Blaine's own projects. You know, he has provided a facility, although the truck, someone mentioned that the truck weigh scale was probably not going to stay in that location because it's too close to the proposed right-of-way, but he has provided a facility to get these trucks off the street. And as far as what is needed, Mr. Jones has indicated that he is substantially complete. Your public works director has said this project is substantially complete and it has met all but a few of the small requirements needed. Now, if a developer comes into to Blaine to build on that site, that's not to say that there aren't more stormwater facilities needed. There are two more stormwater facilities to be added to his facility. But for truck parking right now, it's protected by all the regulations. So if that doesn't answer your question, I'd be glad to expand on it. But I think at this point, your ordinance provides you the ability to grant this property owner at least a one-year extension. I have no problems with coming back after a year and saying, hey, did Mr. Connolly meet any of the additional provisions to get this substantial completion to final completion? I think that's a goal that Mr. Connolly should achieve. Absolutely.
Question? What does Mr. Connolly intend to do with this property?
Well, if I can say this in as polite a context as I can, Mr. Connolly needs to find a developer that will come into Blaine, spend some money, and process that the necessary requirements to make this property viable. Mr. Connolly will do everything he can to try to bring in someone to the community that will do that. Other than that, Mr. Connolly is looking for a viable buyer.
Fair enough.
As far as I can tell.
Pardon my ignorance, but how is the land currently zoned?
It's highway commercial.
Highway commercial A.
Yeah, A. Highway commercial A. Mm-hmm.
And the uses for that would be?
A variety of transit and traveler service uses, such truck parking, as I mentioned, would be one, hotel, restaurant. There's a fairly long list.
Okay. My concern, as I've stated in other venues, is I am trying to keep us from letting anything impede the Blaine Connected development, should that occur. And my fear is that some transportation-related activities would, in fact, enhance Blaine Connected. Others might not. Okay.
Dennis?
Doug?
Question?
No, there's no question. It's more a statement of my own sense.
Dennis
that
has
you
a question.
Haven't set my heart at ease in the sense that you say it could be, as I interpret your words, essentially a truck stop, or it could be a high-end hotel, or it could be anything in between. Have I interpreted what you said correctly?
You have interpreted it correctly. That's what the zoning would
be. Thank you.
Dennis.
Doug, you mentioned there needs to be additional work done for the stormwater, for the whole property. What is that? What specifically can you see that needs to be done?
Well, the way that property is oriented, there are several different storm drainage sub-bases. One of those drains to Peace Portal. Mm-hmm. The other one drains to Albert Street. So there's a bit of a divide there. And in order to satisfy the requirements of the Department of Ecology Stormwater Manual, we need to basically store water in those two sub-bases.
So you've got one now in place?
Yes, and in fact, Harold, to answer your question specifically, there's 14 acres that are upstream of our site. I think the property where the little market is at the corner and the Shell station, that area drains across and through Mr. Connolly's property. He's put in stormwater facilities to do a bypass into the existing stormwater facility that then drains to Portal. Okay, he spent the money to make that happen because we had a serious backup. I don't know if you remember, a few years ago, UPS was flooded because of some problems with the drainage system upstream. Mr. Connolly made those improvements just last year. As far as the Albert Street Avenue, Albert Street that runs out to Portal Way again, there's another stormwater pond that's required there. So there's two more stormwater ponds that would be required, based on how it's developed. But fundamentally, he needs to finish those when a development occurs or a specific mining site plan occurs in that area.
Is that affecting the surrounding property owners because those ponds have not been put in?
No, not at all. The bypass that I just mentioned for the 14 acres upstream has been done and substantially signed off by Public Works. It's operating. It bypasses into the old stormwater ponds. I'd say, you know, the historic stormwater ponds. The water's clean when it leaves the site. Mr. Connolly has no obligation to treat the water from off-site. That's not his responsibility, but he took it on as a requirement in developing his property to do a bypass so that the water got treated before it left the site. At no additional, no one helped him, no one helped compensate him for that whatsoever.
Thanks, Doug.
Any other questions?
Thank you, Doug.
I really appreciate your patience here, and we think we have very strong indications that the market's changing. And I think it's incumbent in the council to give this property a couple of years to go. And you'll see some things happen there, just like you did at the Blaine Business Park. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. Michael, a question for you. If I decided to buy a piece of property and start parking trucks on it, what would I be required to do? I mean,
you'd be required to get a business license to go through the site plan review process, and then you'd be required to improve the site, meaning create a parking area, install stormwater improvements to manage the impervious surface that you're creating, and some of the other things that go along with developing a site would include things such as landscaping around the perimeter,
yeah.
Lighting perhaps. It depends upon the particular instance.
Now, would I be required to do that before I start parking trucks?
Yes.
Or afterwards?
That you would be required to do that before, if you were to be following the code.
Yeah. Now, in this situation, was the code followed?
I would have to say no.
Okay, so the trucks are being parked on there without not complying with the city code.
That's true.
Okay. Any other questions for Michael? Okay. Staff has identified three options for council action. One is to approve the general binding site plan extension request for a majority vote, in which case the project will be extended until July the 13th, 2015. Number two, deny the general binding site plan extension required by a majority vote, in which case the project will expire July the 13th, 2014. Number three, take no action, which is effectively denying the extension request, and the project will expire July the 13th, 2014. Anyone care to make a motion on either of those three options?
I move we accept option number one.
I second it.
Okay, are there any comments or questions regarding that?
I've heard, you know, we've got a lot of concerns about the stormwater and keeping up to date and stuff like this. I think that the tenor of the questions that have been asked here really set the tone for the next year with this extension. I think we should give it the extension, but the tone has been set that they need, the thing needs to be done, it needs to be caught up with rules and regulations, because next time we're all going to be here and we won't forget. So.
Steve?
I think Mr. Conley has done an excellent job. Considering the economy and what he has spent and the improvements he has made on the property, knowing the history of that property pretty much all my life, I think we'd be making a big mistake not to extend him one more year to give him a chance to finish his project.
Anyone else have any comments? Paul?
I would like to see some pressure put on at the storm drainage systems for the whole site be put in place. That would be my concern.
I agree. I would be in favor of allowing the extension, but and I realize we can't determine what future councils are going to do, but I would certainly think that we would. I know we can't put conditions on it, but I would certainly expect action to be taken in certain areas before we would grant a further extension. So
that's understood.
I think it's a warning that if the current council is still in place a year from now, it's unlikely that we would grant another extension unless we saw some improvement in the areas that we've already highlighted. So that's my comment. No other comments? I'll call for a vote. All in favor say aye.
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 Any
opposed? Okay, the motion will carry 6-0.
Thank you.
Your Honor, Susan Marx is here with the Domestic Violence Commission to give her report.
Yeah, we've finished the council action items. We're going to come back to an unfinished portion of the agenda, which is our audience participation. Susan, I'm going to hold you up for just a second. We have one gentleman, Mr. Paul Schroeder, has indicated that he would like to speak. If you would come forward, Mr. Schroeder. And state your name, address for the record. We would appreciate you doing so.
Thank you. Paul Schroeder, 1033 Harrison Avenue in Blaine. Forgive me for resurrecting a contentious issue regarding the name change. And I'll try to make it very, very brief, and this might not be appropriate to ask here, and if it is, I'll just withdraw. But I'm here to try to get some clarification on those individuals that are against this. I spoke before the council 4 weeks ago. And at that time, I stated that it was my view that this was an economic issue that was like a business decision and needed to be made on a rational basis and not on an emotion. And Mr. Hawkins, I don't mean to put you on the spot, but I noticed visually you disagreed with the statement. So just for clarification, if it's not an economic issue for adding the word harbor, how do you see it?
I'm not going to talk to you in council. You want to talk to it afterwards, I'll talk to you.
Okay.
This is not the time.
Okay. I was just confused at your response when I was talking. So apparently it is an inappropriate question to bring up, and I withdraw it from
you. No, I'll talk to you after the meeting.
That's what I'm saying. It's inappropriate in this setting.
Yeah, we normally don't have the council respond to
decision made, and we're just waiting for the folks to make the vote.
Yes, thank you. And I do appreciate the council members that did vote for this to go before the citizens of the town, and I thank you for that. And thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Schroeder. Susan? Be noted for the record that Bonnie will be leaving us.
Sorry about that. I've read your report, though. It's a very good one. Thank you.
Depending on how long the meeting will be, depends on how much we've got. One of those old chalkboards really worked well.
Every time I do a presentation, I debate about whether or not to use the technology, whether it's helpful or just a pain. So I'm Susan Marks. I'm the director of the Bellingham-Whatcom County Commission Against Domestic Violence. And I think as many of you are aware, one of the things that I do kind of on a regular basis is go around to the different councils and talk about some of the work we've been doing. And the reason for that is just to keep people aware of what's happening related to domestic violence and our community response to domestic violence. I'm not here specifically to ask for anything, although today I have an idea that perhaps the community can participate in. But it's really, we want all community members to be involved in domestic violence, and so that's one of the jobs, I think, of our community leaders. So, So just a little bit about the commission. As a reminder, we were formed in 1998, and it was a joint resolution between the city of Bellingham and Whatcom County. And then in 2006, all of the other municipalities in Whatcom County passed ordinances of support. So we see it as our mission to serve all of the jurisdictions throughout Whatcom County. And we have 28 members, and in your packet you have a list of our membership. All of them are leaders from various sectors in our community. And the idea is that, therefore, those leaders have the power, authority, influence to make changes in our community response to domestic violence. And currently we don't have anyone from the city of Blaine on the commission, but as positions open up, we would hope to bring someone on. We like to have representation from throughout the county. So our mission is to provide leadership in the community's efforts to prevent and reduce domestic violence. And what that really means is there are two things we're responsible for. And one is raising awareness in the general community about domestic violence. Specifically, we want people to know what it's, how common it is, what its impact is, and what we can do about it, is what different community members can do about it, and what our local resources are. So that's one of our charges. And the other one is to coordinate and promote best practices in our systems and community response to domestic violence. So again, we want community members, we want community agencies to provide the best possible response to victims and perpetrators of domestic violence. And so we bring in a lot of different projects that would help that happen. And so today what I want to do is just talk about a few different projects that are specifically happening here in Blaine as well as in other places in the community. Actually, the first one is a brand new project that we're spearheading, and I'm hoping that Blaine will be one of the communities that will get on board with us. So this is an idea we stole from a community in, borrowed from a community in Montana, I believe. And the idea is that we would blanket the community with purple lights in the windows, similar to what you'd see around the holidays. Sometimes people have candles that are lights in the windows. And then we would partner those lights with a media campaign in the community. So there might be letters to the editor. There might be banners hung over downtown. There might be a sign on a bus, things that would provide people with a little bit of information about what those purple lights are. So hopefully if people would notice the lights, then they would see some signs or some explanation of what those lights are, probably directing them to our website, which would provide a little more information about domestic violence and what people could do about it. And then we want to partner with local businesses, agencies, and individuals to put these lights in their windows. And we want to focus on each year on Domestic Violence Awareness Month, so in October. So this would be a new thing we want to do. We want to pilot it this October. We still have some details to work out with our full commission at our July at our next meeting, but we would like to find a few communities that would partner with us and do, for example, put their lights in City Hall, or if there are businesses that are interested to put those lights in there, if there are specific community members that they would go and put those lights in their windows of their homes. And again, then we would help coordinate a media and messaging campaign around the community, so that the idea being people would see the lights, then they would maybe read an article in the newspaper, and then they'd say, what are these lights about? And they might be curious enough to go to our website and learn a little bit more about domestic violence in their community and some things that they could do to end domestic violence. So as we work out the details next month, we will be reaching out to some of the different staff at different cities and seeing if they think that there's ways that we could partner on making this happen. I think it's a really great way for just the community to get behind the issue of domestic violence, because a lot of the projects we do are very specific to certain agency responses. And then another thing, this is a project that just kicked off in May here in Blaine. It started in Whatcom County in January of this year, and various law enforcement agencies have been coming on board, but now all Whatcom law enforcement agencies are on board. And this is related to high lethality domestic violence cases. So one thing that we have seen is that nationally, it's been shown that only 4% of homicide victims have been connected to a domestic violence advocate. And one of the best ways to reduce a victim's lethality is connect her to an advocate for safety planning and to get information about all those different resources that are available to her. And the other thing that kind of partners with that is law enforcement. They have a very important role in domestic violence, but their role is limited. If they go to the scene of a domestic violence call, they can respond to the crime that takes place, but they cannot stay with that victim for the next night or the next night or the next night. They can't move in with that victim and keep her safe. So their role is limited to one scenario. So we started a project that really brings together those two issues, and it's based again on another national program. And the idea is that when law enforcement goes to the scene of a domestic violence call, and you have in your packets the protocol, I'm going to pull that up for a second. They have a protocol that they're going to follow, in which they're going to ask questions of the victim at the scene about the domestic violence they've experienced. So it's a form that looks like this, and it's 11 questions. So it's fairly simple. It should only take a law enforcement officer maybe 5 minutes to fill out. And these questions also have been nationally shown to be the things that show the highest lethality for a victim. So right now, when a law enforcement officer goes to the scene of a domestic violence call, they look at these questions and they ask the victim these 11 questions. If the victim screens in, and they have some different ways that they can screen in, which can be answering yes to a certain number of questions, or it can be if the officer is at that scene and saying, you know, she said no to all these questions, but I just have a sense there's something wrong in this situation. So we also want to give law enforcement a way to follow their own gut instinct as well. So if they feel like the victim either screens in based on their gut or based on answers to these questions, then they're going to connect that victim directly to a domestic violence advocate. They're going to use their own phone. They're going to stand by while the advocate and the victim talk on the phone, probably about a 10-minute conversation. So it's based on just getting that victim immediate safety for that evening and getting her to engage with that advocate immediately, so then we can do follow-up in the future. So then the law enforcement officer will go about the rest of their work, which will generally be taking someone, arresting someone and taking them to jail, who the primary aggressor, the perpetrator in that situation is. And then the domestic violence advocate can follow up with the victim the next day and 2 days later and the next week and just continue following up with that victim to provide them with support as they need it to be safe. So this is a way, and we're just starting to get data on this, but so far in Whatcom County, we've had, since January with the different agencies coming on board, we've had more than 70 different victims screened as high risk. And about 60 or 70% of those have chosen to speak with an advocate on the phone, and then some have then been able to talk to an advocate another time, because the victim does always have the right to say no at that moment. So we'll be, by the time I come back again, we'll have some more data related to how it's working for the Blaine Police Department. But it's something that we're very excited and something that we found law enforcement has been very interested in, because I think a lot of times they also feel the limitations of being on the scene making an arrest. And sometimes the perpetrator gets out of jail the next morning, and the victim is not necessarily safe in the long term. She can only call the police again if he breaks no contact or if there's a crime. And so we're trying to find ways for victims to plan for their safety. Then, let's see. Okay. So then another program that we're working on, and this is, right now we're partnering with the Ferndale School District. I think you all heard a little bit about this in January, because we asked for support from the city on a grant application. So we have a grant application from the U.S. Department of Justice, or we have an award from the U.S. Department of Justice. And we're one of only 9 sites in the country that have gotten this award, and it's to work on addressing domestic violence, dating violence, sexual assault, and stalking in middle and high schools. And we partner with the Ferndale School District on that grant, and we have had it for almost 3 years. And we now have the opportunity to extend that grant, which we wrote in January to extend it. And we decided when we wanted to extend it, we wanted to do 2 things. And one was we wanted to look at the elementary schools as well. We felt like it's great that we're working with middle and high schools, but it became clear pretty quickly that we need to start even earlier letting kids know about how to have healthy relationships. And that can start in with their friendships, but that extends into their dating relationships as they grow older. And then we also wanted to partner with another school district. And because of the proximity between Blaine and Ferndale, because this has been a really supportive community of the issue, both with law enforcement and the council and other community agencies, we felt like Blaine would be the right place to go. And we approached the superintendent. He was very interested. So we did submit a application in January. This is being a federal grant. It's a very long wait time. So we don't hear until September. But and the other thing that we had to choose as part of the grant, two different they call them special populations they would also focus on, and so we chose to focus on youth and children who are experiencing homelessness and also youth and children who are experiencing commercial sexual exploitation and how those overlap with domestic violence, and there's a lot of overlap in both of those areas. And what we would really be doing is helping the school develop policies and procedures for when they identify students or when a student discloses to a staff member. We would help provide training for all staff on those issues. And what we've done with Ferndale is we put together an online training for all of their staff, and then we're doing an in-person in-depth training for their counselors, administrators, people who are most likely to get disclosures and respond. We've been doing parent and community education. And this is something actually that we're the only of the 9 sites, the only one that have really focused on the wider community. And we did a needs assessment, and one of the things we found is that people were saying it's great to change the school climate and that can be really useful, but then those kids go home to their families and then they go to the library and the Boys and Girls Club and they go out to eat and they're living in this broader community. And so we really need to focus on bringing the community in, which is part of why we wrote that grant. We asked the city of Blaine to sign on, and we asked the city of Ferndale to sign on to show that there was community support for this. And then we're working with youth at the schools to do their own outreach campaigns. So they have done things like they've done announcements on over the loudspeakers in the morning. They've done tabling during lunch times. They've done assemblies. They brought in speakers. So the youth have come up with their own ideas. They put together T-shirts. So they've come up with their own ideas for how to interest other students about the issues of dating violence and sexual assault and how to get them engaged in prevention. And then we're working with Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault Services to provide services on site for the students at schools. They're doing one-on-one counseling and support groups and things that sometimes their school counselors have said that they have limited time, and so it's really helpful to have the outside agency come in. So we're really hoping to get this in September. I go back and forth about some days I'm really sure we're going to get it, and then some days I'm nervous that I haven't heard anything yet. So we'll definitely be letting you all know if we receive the grant. And even if we don't, we really want to figure out a way to continue to take this pilot project and partner with the other districts. Even if we don't have as much funding to fund a full-time staff member, it's still really important to us. And so it may not be as comprehensive as it would be with the grant, but it's something that we don't want to just let die just because there's not as much money to go along with it. So I'm happy to take any questions now about any of those specific programs, or of course you can contact me anytime or get on our website to learn more about us or our projects.
Susan, thank you very, very much. Appreciate your coming on an annual basis, and this connection is always very important to the council. Thank you very much.
See, I do have a question.
Go ahead, Charlie.
At the bottom of the thing that they fill out, it says, it asks about drugs or alcohol, and they don't, how come that's not part of the assessment?
You know, that's a good question. It actually has not been shown to be one of the top indicators of lethality in domestic violence cases. However, it's something that our local prosecutors said that they really want to know. So this form also goes to prosecutors, and they use it in making their decisions about how they're going to ask for bail, what they're going to charge with. And that was a question they wanted to know the answer for their own purposes. So, yeah. So just to support them, we put that on as well.
Okay, the next item on our agenda will be commission, committee, and board reports. Mr. Cotner is not here. Blaine Tourism and Advisory Committee, Steve.
We have a meeting tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. for anybody that wants to join us.
Okay. Now about the countywide economic development.
No report for that for the Boys and Girls Club.
Okay, Blaine's not here for the chamber. WTA, Paul.
No report.
Drayton Harbor Shellfish Advisory Committee, Charlie.
Meeting Wednesday and every Friday at 4 o'clock down at the commercial dock. You can buy sugar oysters, and they're really, really good.
Okay, repeat those times again, Charlie.
At 4 o'clock down at the by the commercial dock, the last end of gate 3, you can buy small oysters. And they're really, really good.
All righty. Library Committee, Dennis.
They're having a book sale on the 4th, and the Senior Center has that breakfast, pancake breakfast on the 4th.
Okay. Planning Commission, Mr. Jones.
No report from the Planning Commission, sir, and the Park and Cemetery Board will have a report at most likely at the next council meeting related to the playground and the Northwest Parks and Rec District grant proposal.
Small Cities Caucus met, I believe, last week, and I handed out the jail development. There was a purpose of the meeting was to discuss the new jail, and this document that was handed out sort of highlights the key events to date and what their plans are for the future. The county is going to jointly seek with the cities a voter approval tax measure of 0.2% sales tax to finance the construction support of the jail in the 2015 primary election. And they give a lot of reasons why a new jail is important. When you hear the stories that are told about the current jail, you come to realize very quickly that we need a new jail, and very fast. They've asked us as a city to support the measure, and they will be getting additional information on this, so that this is just a preliminary notification of where the county plans to go with this, so I'll try and keep the council informed as we go forward.
Have they got the 40 acres yet?
I don't know the answer to that. I believe they do. That's in Ferndale on La Bounty Road, and I believe that's been done, but I know that that's where they're planning on putting it. Okay, Finance Committee, Jeff.
We have no report and actually need to schedule another meeting.
Okay. Watcom Council of Government said there's no report. And the North Watcom Fire Update, Chief Hollander.
Good evening, Council. I shared with you our monthly chief's report. If you have any questions on that,
And I have an update on the rail question that I've been asked for a lot of weeks. The Whatcom County Department of Emergency Management will be spearheading a training and a practice response for all-hazard rail, not only just oil, but it could be an Amtrak passenger train. So because the amount of labor and staff that would be involved in a response, it's not going to be an individual district response. It's going to be a countywide response. So if there is an oil tanker spill here, we'll be getting the resources from all the rest of the county, not just fire, law enforcement, all of the players that are involved. And part of this training is going to be funded by Burlington Northern. So there's progress to tell you.
A television program that was highlighting Burlington Northern's wanting to work with
First responders.
Yeah, which I think is a great idea.
I don't have a timeline yet. They just came to the operations meeting last week and presented the information. So I will keep you posted as the events occur. Okay.
Thank you, Chief.
Thank you.
Okay, the next item on the agenda is department reports. Mr. City Manager.
Good evening. A few things to follow up with you on relating to public works. First, our energy conservation project kind of occurred to me with the fact that we were refunding another bond to kind of give you an update. We have 100% drawings for the wastewater plant, so that means that we can now start reviewing and approving submittals, and equipment is getting ordered, and we're starting to talk about construction sequencing. So that's getting exciting. I think I'd already mentioned on the second and third floor of this building, all the lights have been swapped out. The first floor lobby required a kind of a specialized setup. We've done kind of a demonstration light that we liked, and that's the one closest to the bank right now. So we went ahead and approved those, and those lamps are being shipped, and I would expect those to be installed after the 4th of July. So that lobby is going to look like it hasn't looked in a really long time, probably since we've been in this building, because the bulbs that were in there were very, very expensive. We've literally have been taking them from other parts of the building just to maintain a minimum light in there. So we're happy to see that happen. The LED streetlights, the first contract that was funded by the Transportation Improvement Board, is substantially complete. And the remainder of the lights that will be done through our energy conservation bond have been ordered. And we expect those to start going up in the middle of July. So it's conceivable, because this contractor is incredibly efficient. They had two crews that we could barely keep up our inspections. We could have all LED lights by the end of July. So I'm really excited about that. A couple weeks ago, we started reclaim water sales to the golf course, so that's continuing. Our restrooms are open at Marine Park. And just heard today, and I think the mayor, you'll be getting a letter, that Department of Ecology has honored us with the Wastewater Treatment Plant Outstanding Performance Award. This is a very special, distinguished award for us, indicating full compliance with all of our permit requirements for our new permit, which included the reclaimed water in 2013. Out of the 300 statewide plants that are permitted, only 125 received this award. So we're very proud of that. Marine Drive Pier, End Pier, we've been working with the port. The plan that I relayed to you at our last council meeting, the kind of the conceptual schematic, is being put into place. Public works crews have fenced off the area that is failing so that our public safety concerns are abated. We still plan on covering that with some fabric and quarry spalls just to keep stormwater and just future erosion from impacting that area. And then the port is providing us with a couple of benches. They're going to put in a porta potty. They're going to stripe parking in their lot, which is just next to Starfish, which is already public parking, but you can't hardly tell. There's a lot of material stored there by their tenant and stuff that's getting cleaned up. And they'll be putting up parking signs. And we have ordered a couple of self-watering planters that will park adjacent to the benches. So people that are walking out there will have a place to rest as they're walking. So that's kind of the short-term plan, and we'll be continuing to work with the port on the long-term future for that. And then finally, just relating to our transportation improvement program, I think it was you, Mr. Mayor, who brought up last week, last meeting, the importance of transportation funding and getting federal funding. And the AWC actually did a bit of an article on that probably the end of May, I'm thinking, kind of urging cities to be more proactive in getting another transportation bill approved. In that, one of those things was sending a letter to your congressional delegation. So I've taken the liberty of writing one. Wanted to let you know that other things that they talked about were passing a city resolution affirming the value of transportation, sending a local media press release, things like that. So at this point in time, like I said, I've written a letter that could be signed by the mayor. If there's anything else the council would like us to do to be more proactive, I'm certainly all ears to that. Thank you.
Working on a resolution would be appropriate.
Okay. Any other feedback on that? Well, thank you.
Okay. You're ready.
So just a quick update on the development report for the first quarter. And there's not a ton to report, frankly. The single-family residential units are quite low for this time this year. And last year we were looking at, actually, I think those numbers below should be 12 and 13 rather than 13 and 14, but 16 and 5 units respectively in prior years. One reason why we are low this year is we had a rush towards the end of the year due to reinstituting some of the fees and things. So this is kind of what we expected. But here are the numbers looking back over a couple of years. We still see that really big blip back in the 2004, 5, and 6, which is the boom, which led to our bust pretty much nationwide. But again, last year in 2013 and in 2012, we were back to what was pretty close to typical for Blaine, around 40, 45 units, which is what was in the prior years before the big boom there. The units that we've seen, new construction for building permits, just two single-family units are there, the green dots on the map, one in the East Blaine area and one down. Actually, Mr. Hawkins can probably see it from his kitchen window. Down in the Bayview area. And the other two developments of any substance are the Edeline Dairy, of course, happening here on Peace Portal, and then the renovation out at Semiahmoo Resort. If you haven't been in the resort recently, I encourage you to go out and have a drink, have dinner, do something out there. Not only, of course, are customers good for them, but they've done a lot of work in both of the restaurants, so it's kind of nice to see. The Edeline Dairy store is a little bit farther along than this picture, which is from last week, indicates. That's the first thing we've seen in downtown Blaine in a little while as far as new construction goes, if you consider the steakhouse the last new construction, even though it was really a substantial remodel. That was a couple of years ago, and now we have another building going in about a block away. You know, these one little incremental step at a time kind of things, it's really easy for us to lose track of the progress that's being made there, but if you look back at downtown Blaine compared 10 years ago to now, there's a really big difference. And in another year or two, people will forget that this wasn't there. But it's, again, one step at a time. This store is about just under 3,400 square feet. You'll see it has parking on the north side when it's developed a little bit tucked around the back. There's going to be sort of a pedestrian seating area on the south side along the corner. We worked with the developer to be flexible on the design standards to allow them to have some fenced storage area, which will be architecturally designed. It's behind a quite attractive screen. I think you'll find some of that is in the public right-of-way where they have a use permit to be able to store milk crates because they have a lot of milk crates. Their shipments come early in the morning, about 7 a.m., which is nice for the downtown, so you won't see those trucks later in the day. We'll see a lot of traffic through there, I think. It's going to be really interesting to see something with that much use happening downtown. Yes, sir?
I was looking at yesterday when I drove by there, and it looks like they have this kind of on the northwest corner of the building. It's like it's going to be the entryway type thing. It looks like the trees are going to cover up the whole look of that.
We were just talking about that today, that it looks like the trees are going in the windows. And I haven't had a chance yet to talk with Raven, but we're going to have to look at what might need to happen there as far as trimming some street trees and changing that a little bit. I wish I had an elevation drawing to show you what's happening on that northwest corner. It is the entrance. So the entrance is at the street and also at the parking. So we had them move their entrance to the corner of the building. They really wanted... I will actually tell you, they wanted to have this building all the way at the back of the property with parking in the front, just like you'd see at a 7-Eleven or something like that. And as a result of our downtown design standards, which are good, but we're in the process of updating them to make them better, I said, no, you can't. We've come to what I think is a great design. Their parking and the street are both very easily accessible from the front door. And there's sort of a tower there that I don't know how much of it's up right now, but there's going to be a tower at that point on the building, which will put their sign pretty high up in the air. You might be able to see it from the freeway. And the design is really very nice. Single story, but it's 22-foot tall ceilings inside. And that's an important thing to bear in mind as we come back to you later and talk about building heights.
Why did they have 22 feet?
Because they want the openness and the airiness. They also have a loft over part of it where there's a little mezzanine. So I'll move on, not to get into too many details on this. No, it's really interesting, and like I say, it's great to see something going up in downtown Blaine. New building construction values. We have a little over $2 million in construction value in the first quarter. Most of that is non-residential. A really significant portion of that is those two projects I just mentioned, the Edeline and the remodel out at the hotel. The other two residential units make up the difference. And permit fees, now this includes all permit fees, not just for the new construction, which I was just reporting on, so this is a little bit skewed data because now we're taking into account remodels, re-roofing, demos, all those sorts of things. We're at about 19%. We'd like to be at 25% of the building permits, but that's not too far off. And we're at 39% for land use, and we're exceeding the 25% expected. Land use is a really tough one because you could have one subdivision come in and have a banner year, and then if you budget based on that banner year, next year you're going to be way, way below budget. So it's a bit of a wild card. You'll see, I think we're going to exceed that this year based on some of the conversations that I had, but next year, who knows, it could be a quiet year for subdividing land. Miscellaneous building permits. There are always other building permits happen besides new construction. Quite a few of those are remodels. There are also mechanical plumbing, people changing out HVAC units and things like that. Really big HVAC unit went up on top of the building behind you, on top of the Trade Center building that was replaced. Dramatically quieter than the one that was there before, which I'm sure the neighbors are happy about, which sadly only makes the one on top of our building obviously louder. But It is in the works, but it was really great to see. We tested the noise after it was installed, and it is super quiet, the one across the way. Number of building inspections. In spite of only having a few projects going on, there are still quite a few inspections happening because of all those other incidental permits. We're right about in the middle of what was happening in the two prior years for the first quarter, so 134 building inspections, which has proven to be an excellent training ground for Cliff, our new building inspector. He's doing really well and is now doing quite a few inspections on his own, although, of course, Ed is still keeping close tabs on him. Ed takes his job very, very seriously and very, very personally. And so you can be assured that Cliff will be getting a lot of attention. Here's a picture of that building that you can probably see from Mr. Hawkins' kitchen. He should have you all over for breakfast, and you can take a look. It's on Ruby Street, which is very short, almost like an alley kind of configuration, but this is a waterfront home on one of those last waterfront lots in that neighborhood. Neat style, kind of a more modern construction, and I'm sure it'll be a lovely home when it's done. Land use applications. So in the first quarter, there were none that came to council and none that came to planning commission. 5 submitted and 5 handled because they were all administrative permits. So you didn't see any of those, but we were busy working on some of these projects, including a PUD modification and a shoreline substantial development permit revision for some of the exterior work that was done at the hotel. They did some pretty minor exterior work, really significant interior work. We, of course, did the permitting for Edeline for their land disturbance, which is their infrastructure. 24/7 parcel, which is just across from the old City Hall, has been through a site plan review. They're probably going to be expanding and building out to the street. That's Mr. Ely's old shop there, and that'll be expanding, I think, probably doubling in size, roughly. It's tough to take those older buildings and remodel and repurpose them, so this is an interesting one to see play out. I hope it comes out the way we expect. Yes, sir.
Will there be any parking in that one?
There's no required parking. So there will be one parking space in the back to meet ADA requirements. But other than that, there are no parking spaces required, and they are not putting any parking in. And then 2 short plots that are happening, one out in East Blaine created another 5-acre parcel, which is the legal lot size in East Blaine without water and sewer. And that's the Holman short plot. And then the Wendy Davis short plot created 2 additional single family lots right on the city limits on the south side of H Street. There's one existing home on that property, and they've sliced it into 2 more. It's at the corner of Odell and H Street. I don't know if it's empty or not. The house that's on the property has a pool. It's a big house with kind of a long driveway that drops down off of H Street, and there's a pool in the backyard. So that's it. Any questions on that report? Try to keep it quick for you.
Thank you, Michael.
Then Jeff is up.
All right, well, this time last year, we were in a very different situation, weren't we? The closure of a major business, but I have to say that, you know, we definitely weathered the storm and ended the year on a positive note. And I'm pleased to report that our first quarter finances show a sign of stability. And all of our major funds are within revenue and our spending targets, and our fund balances are at or above those target levels. Looking at our general fund, revenue came in slightly higher than anticipated for the month of March, as you see on this chart, and expenditures were well within forecasts, and our monthly carryover balance was above the target. Our target is at around $275,000, and through the first quarter, we ended a little above $750,000. So that's a very good sign there, especially for our general fund. So then comparing to budget, our revenue was 25%, so right on target with our revenues. And you've heard me talk about sales tax. That is a major component of our general fund revenue, makes up about over 25%. And our first quarter sales tax revenue was 24% of the budget, so just a little bit under what we forecasted. And then compared to last year's first quarter, we were down about 8%, and slightly lower numbers in retail sales and construction. But I anticipate that in the second quarter, those numbers will improve, because we've heard about some of the construction activity occurring at the resort. Retail sales are still remaining strong, as you can see at this chart, 2009 through 2013, retail sales portion has grown significantly, and that makes up 40% of our total sales tax revenue. So from 2009 to 2013, the retail sales portion has grown about 80%. So that's pretty significant. And you've heard me talk about streamlined sales tax and all the internet orders. That's made a huge difference. And then compared to last year's first quarter, our revenues are up by 3.6%, and our taxes are up slightly, and our court fee revenue is also up compared to last year. Then looking at our general fund expenditures, compared to the budget, we're at 25%, so we're right on target there. And then compared to last year, we're up by 13%, but of course we drastically reduced our 2013 budget, and then our 2014 budget, of course, is back up to our spending levels that we put into the budget during our study sessions and passed in the 2014 budget. And looking at our enterprise funds, if you recall last year, they were quite in a slump. We were beginning to climb out of that slump. For all of them, in our electric fund, our operating revenue was at 28% of the budget and about 5% higher compared to last year's first quarter. So that's good there. And our operating expenses were 23% of the budget. And our water revenue is 22%, so slightly down from our budget, our estimate. But again, we're in the first quarter. Once we get into the drier season, which we're starting now, we're going to start to see those numbers improve. And compared to last year, it's up about 1%, so slight improvement there. And then our operating expenses were 20% of our budget. And here's a really good, what I think is a significant sign here for our wastewater fund. Our revenue is right on target at 25% of what we budgeted. And compared to last year, it's up by 7%. So we're starting to see some improvement there with our sewer revenue. And our operating expenses were within 20% of the budget. You see that spike there in June. That's our debt service payment on the treatment plant that's due in that month. And then stormwater, we're really no significant changes there or variances. We're 25% within our forecast, and compared to 2013, really no major changes. And our spending was 20% of the budget. So looking at some of our economic indicators for the community, I've already talked about sales tax, our utility taxes, which goes into the general fund. Those are all within our targets, our budget, 25%. And then also for our other utility taxes, such as on natural gas, garbage, and telephone, we're at 26%, or at almost 27% of our budget. And that's been an improvement compared to previous years. And it's 32% compared to what we collected in the first quarter of last year. And our 1 cent gas tax, of course, that's still doing very well. We're at 23% of our forecast, and it's 4% higher compared to last year's first quarter. And we collected last year about $250,000. I anticipate that we'll collect as much as that, if not maybe a little bit more this year. And our hotel-motel tax, that, compared to last year's, pretty much on target. However, we're kind of below our budget, but that's to be anticipated, as we know that the resort is not at full capacity yet. And I believe once it is, we're going to see those numbers improve. And our real estate excise tax, those numbers are down, but if you recall, we had some major real estate transactions occur last year. So when you're comparing to last year, it's kind of an anomaly. We're about 70% of the budget and 61% compared to last year's first quarter, but that's why we had major real estate sales occur. And then our property taxes coming in about the same as last year's first quarter. Of course, you'll see in our second quarter we'll get our big bump there, big collection, which is all you know that property taxes are due in May and November of each year. Any questions? As I said, you know the numbers look good, but we've talked about in our budget study sessions and the Finance Committee that you know we need to continue to look at long-term sustainable financial plan that'll help you know buffer these times of downturns and any major variances.
Jeff, in two or three cases, you noted where the first quarter results were significantly below the budgeted amount for the first quarter. What would we have to forego if the figures continued in that vein?
Well, where we saw some of the slight decreases would be in sales tax revenue. And I think what occurred there, what we saw in the first quarter, was the Canadian dollar drop.
Mm-hmm.
And but looking at our second quarter numbers now, we haven't finished or closed out June, but looking at April and May, I've seen that those numbers have improved, especially in retail sales.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Jeff, thank you very much.
Thank you.
David, do you have any comments you wish to make?
I think that Sherry's got some first.
Sherry has some stuff. Good.
It's walking people. Sherry, watch her.
So this is a follow-up on the submission that I did last week for the ballot measure. I sent it in to the county auditor, including the certification, and they have documented the receipt of it. There's two things that the city will need to do, the council. One of them is submittal of a resolution, which we did. Then an explanatory statement not to exceed 100 words, which should be prepared by the city attorney and submitted to the county auditor by Tuesday, August 5th. And then the jurisdiction needs to appoint two committees, a pro committee and a con committee, regarding the name change. And these committees should be no less than two members and no more than three. And once appointed, the committee can appoint other persons to serve as advisors. The list of appointed committee members is to be submitted to the county auditor no later than Monday, August 11th. So with that, the question would be to the council, how you want to go about doing this. We could either advertise in the Northern Light and on the website to see who would be interested in serving on the two different committees. We could also contact those people who have provided their testimony during audience participation and see if they're interested in being part of the committee. My thought was that maybe this could be, if the information was received by the council, let's say even my office, we could take it to the council on the 14th of July, where the appointment could be made, and then from that point on, there's nothing more that the council has to do. I would notify the county who has been appointed for the pro side and the con side, and then it's up to them to put together their 200-word statements that would go on the voter's pamphlet.
Any ideas or suggestions?
I think you have to contact the people that were most outspoken about it.
What about the ones that were for it?
Same way.
I agree. I think it would be helpful if we try to see if any of the people that have spoken for or against would be interested in being on the committee.
So I could start there with making telephone calls.
Trevor Hoskins and Clark will probably have other names. I would vote by him.
Okay, and then that
he had a list of 190 names, and I think I might get him to recommend 5 or 6 or 7.
Okay, and then how would the council like to make that determination as to who to appoint? Do you, because you may get a lot of names coming in on either side. So I just want to figure out what the process will be. Do you want to just be given the names prior to the council meeting to review?
So just to clarify, the purpose of the committees is to write the comments or the narrative for the pamphlet. So it's a short-lived process.
I would suggest bringing the names forward for the next meeting. Or you can do it prior to that by email.
We can actually talk to someone too.
Yeah. Okay. We'll have to go and talk, we'll all have to go and talk to people and find out if they're interested.
Harry, accept Sherry cutting the list of interested people down to 5 on each side?
Yeah, I think that would be appropriate. I think that would be our aim, would be to have 5 people on the side.
Good.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then you'll make for each side a selection of 3.
Yeah.
Okay, I can do that.
Okay, we'll have to try and figure out who's really interested, who has the greatest interest.
Okay, thank you. I'll work on that.
Okay.
Council members, Mayor, I just have a couple little short ones. We are preparing for the 4th of July. We had a turnout on Friday to do some cleanup of the city. I want to thank Councilman Olson and his family, his wife, who helped out. I think we've got a good start on it. There's certainly some other things that can be done. But we're getting ready for the event. Public Works has been diligently cleaning things up, and private property owners have been doing the same. I think it's going to be a great event, and we're looking forward to that. And then just the last thing I want to tell you is this is my first full year here. How about that?
Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. I made it.
Survived.
Made the first year. So, and I took any questions or comments you might have.
Good job.
All right.
I have a question about the 4th of July.
Uh-huh.
So I heard that Sue spent 14 hours of unpaid time cleaning up downtown. Is that true? Maybe. It wasn't in her contract?
Well, I guess you can say that Public Works and Clean Cut did not have the same interpretation of their contract. And so, whereas Public Works was of the opinion that what we asked to be done was something they should be doing on a regular basis throughout the 1 year period of her contract, instead she did it over the course of 1 week part-time, and Public Works contributed an employee to assist. So it was a mutual compromise to try to achieve a goal.
They do a lot. Yeah. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Anything else?
Thank you.
No, thank you, David. We have the calendar in front of us. Any particular dates we should be paying attention to? We've got the July 14th and July the 28th is our council meeting. We have a study session on the 14th planned. Is that correct?
For PSE.
PSE. And the City Hall is closed on the 4th.
So. On Thursday, it says 6 to 8, community open house. Is that here?
That is here, yeah.
Okay.
Unless adjust the schedule, that it's right before the elevator goes down. So depending upon the elevator work schedule, we may adjust it.
Okay. Is there any unfinished business? Any council new business? Hearing none, I will adjourn the meeting at 8:18.
Hey, Harry.
We didn't get up.